Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the February 20th Providers Meeting. If you'd all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please stay with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I have a little bit of feedback here. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda?
We have an amended item, A7, submittal of a report on activities for the Commission on the Status of Women, San Luis Obispo. Dated January 28th, 2010. Recommend item be received and filed. Staff is recommending this item be amended to full attachment 3 to allow staff more time
to
review.
One second, Madam Clerk. I'm sorry. This is pretty... I wonder if this problem is inside the...
I'm not sure that it isn't the extra microphone over here.
The microphone's in here?
Well, I wonder. Could you turn that off?
Can you turn yours down, maybe? I'm not sure if yours is the one that's creating the interference. It's not? Pardon?
Mics are all the way down.
Okay, am I back feeding out here too? Is anybody else? Let's try it again.
Okay. A7 is...
Thank you.
...being amended. Staff is recommending this item be amended to pull attachment 3 to allow staff more time to review the requested changes to the bylaws. A22 is amended, submitted by planning and building of a resolution authorizing Sacramento County as the lead collaborative entity to apply for funds on behalf of the County of San Luis Obispo for energy efficiency and conservation activities. Staff is recommending this item be amended to add Exhibit A that was inadvertently left out of the packet. The pages are attached for your approval. Under closed session, we have an added item pending litigation. Number 10, County of San Luis Obispo versus Insurance of the West, and conference with real property negotiator, property description, APN 044-151-009, near northwest corner, Highway 227 and Price Canyon Road, Old Edna, San Luis Obispo, party with whom negotiating, Craig W. Stoller, instructions to negotiator, price terms and conditions. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. That's it.
Thank you, ma'am. With the board's consent, what I'm going to ask is if we can shift something just quickly here. We have one presentation to make, and we have a number of requests to speak and public comment. I'm going to ask that we move the presentation prior to public comment, if we could. Is there any problem with that? Okay, good. We're going to do that. We'll go to the consent first, and then we're going to go into the presentation. I have one, two, three, four requests to speak on the consent. I have David Hicks on A1, please. And it will be followed by Paula Upperhide on A7.
Good evening, Supervisor Meacham and the Board of Supervisors. I'm David Hicks. I'm the Wastewater Division Manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. I'm here this morning just briefly to ask this board's support for staff's recommendation for item A1, the extension of the biosolids interim ordinance. As the largest generator of biosolids here in the county, we have a vested interest in biosolids policies and regulations. As you may know, we currently ship all of our biosolids out of the county for composting. We've been an involved partner with the County Environmental Health, other agencies, and community members in developing standards for policies and a draft long-term ordinance. Biosolid policies and regulations need to be balanced and fair, and they need to be developed in our county. And so going to that, our interim ordinance is an important stepping stone in that process, and that's why it's really important that we extend this interim ordinance for another 48 months. More discussions will be obviously returning to this board with the conservation and open space element and the ag grading, but at this time, the city would really strongly recommend that this board adopts staff's recommendation for the interim policy as an important stepping stone for biosolids policies in this county. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Professor Patterson.
Yes, thank you. This item sets the hearing.
That's right. Yeah, I understand.
2 weeks from now, and I just wanted to make sure that was clear. We'll actually have a public hearing on the item.
Yes.
Thank you for
thank you, Mr. Hicks. Appreciate that. Paula Lipperheide, and that'll be followed by Andrea Liddy, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, I'm Paula Lipperheide. I chair the Commission on the Status of Women. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on the Commission on the Status of Women's annual report. First, I would like to thank Supervisor Bruce Gibson and Supervisor Frank Meacham for your recent appointments. And thank you, Jim Patterson, for your upcoming appointment. I am proud to report that the Commission on the Status of Women has come a long ways towards becoming a more effective commission for you. With six new appointments, we are now finally getting a membership level that will help us meet our goals. The Commission on the Status of Women has been working to become a proactive commission. In times like these, organizations that depend on government funding are finding the money that magically appeared not there. We, the Commission, are not going to let budget cuts stop us from our mission. With big budget cuts, when big budget cuts are happening, especially in health and welfare, it hits women and children the hardest. We understand that you, as our supervisors, need the information to make these hard decisions. As supervisors, you can make scorched earth cuts or surgical cuts. We prefer the latter, but you need information to make the decisions and the means to communicate them to the 48% of your constituents that they touch. As I hope you can see from our report, the Commission has accomplished a great deal this year. I am excited about what we are doing to keep our commission close to the issues facing women of our county, as well as creating ways for our work to continue without funding from the county government. We volunteer to do this because we believe the reason we were formed in 1975 is still true today, even though the issues may have changed. The reason is to help women of our county have a voice in their government. Even without county funding, we are finding ways to accomplish our goals by partnering with other organizations, contributing support to their goals, and receiving support in return. This is a change in paradigm for the Commission, but it is working, and it is time, it is this time that it needs to be executed. Currently, we are working on Day with Creative Women, partnering with the Women's Community Center, Women's Way to Health, partnering with local hospitals and physicians, partnering with the Grizzly Academy to help with distribution of our survey to increase the number administered, collated, and reported to you. And our retreat this year is focused on strategic plan for the next 2 or 3 years. We need you, our supervisors, to stay engaged with us. Appoint commissioners when vacancies occur in your district. Support us when you can in our endeavors to be financially independent. And help us communicate to the community partners the information they need to make their tough decisions.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Lytle, followed by Shelley Higginbotham, please. You can't hear very well. I don't know what the deal is with the sound. What can we do something from the back? Can they... Okay, they're in there working on it right now. We'll try to, if you would, please, over here, please. When you speak, the microphone is right on the top of the podium, or the dais there, and if you just kind of project your voice to the other side, that way it'd probably be heard a little bit easier. I don't know what the deal is with the sound today. We have a lot of back feet coming from someplace, I don't know where. Could be my body or... Okay, let's try it, if we could, please.
I think you called my name, I'm not sure. Andrea Liddy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My name's Andrea Liddy. I'm the kennel supervisor at Animal Services, the County Department of Animal Services. And I'm here in place of Dr. Eric Anderson, who's at an Animal Directors Conference this week. I'm here to speak on behalf of Spay Day. I think most people know spaying and neutering continues to be a major problem in this county, particularly in the North County. We see in other cities the ratio of animals coming into the shelter is pretty equal between cats and dogs. In the North County areas, it's two cats for every dog that we take in, so it continues to be a major problem in the North County areas. The shelter continues to run full with both cats and dogs. And last year, we depended on fosters, primarily about three people that devoted their whole summer and fall to fostering primarily cats. And they took in over 800 cats just in the couple months of last summer. And they still have many of them that they're trying to find homes for. So people that say they want their children to see the miracle of birth and new life, I encourage them to become a foster for us instead of allowing their animal at home to become pregnant and raising animals. As you know, the budget continues to be a problem, and I know the cities are looking for ways to make better use of their money, and if they can encourage their local residents and constituents to get their animals spayed and neutered. Today we are releasing spay-neuter certificates, which are good for $40 towards spaying and neutering with any veterinarian in the county. Any county resident can apply for those certificates, and they can reach us at Animal Services and some other locations. So I encourage residents to do their part to help us do our job better and put us out of business. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Do they need a break right at this moment? Are they looking to? We're going to take. Shelly, if you would just be patient with me for a minute, we're going to take a break till about 9:20 and allow them to work on this. They said that they have a couple technical difficulties they're working on. They should be able to take care of it. So at 9:20, we'll be back. Okay, are we good to go now? Can you hear us now? Can you hear me now? All right. Ms. Hickenbottom, if you'd please come back up to the dais, please. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it, young lady.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman Meacham and Board of Supervisors, I'm Shelley Hickenbottom.
Just a second. Excuse me, folks. If you could, please, in the back. It's a little disruptive to those that are trying to speak. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm the Mayor Pro Tem from the City of Pismo Beach, and I came here to thank you on behalf of the City Council and the City of Pismo Beach for your support of our letters to Senator Boxner and Feinstein. As you know, we are embarking on a very expensive journey in trying to preserve our bluffs, and it is really critical that we get the support of the federal government. We have been fortunate to have partnered with the Army Corps of Engineers. They are almost finished with their engineering study, and we're going to get the report on really some recommendations on what we can do to secure the bluffs. If we don't do something, we will lose two sewer lift stations, which will be catastrophic. We're looking at the federal piece of mitigation at over $4 million. So we are really going to need the federal government's help. We're going to need the state's help because our share of that is going to be over $2 million. So the city is going to leave no stone unturned, and we really, truly appreciate your support. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Shelley. Appreciate it. Oh, here we go again.
Yes.
That is all the requests I have on the consent board. Mr. Hill?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like a quick comment on 825.
Okay.
Pleasure. I'm okay, sir.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to comment on item A10 and item A16 and A17.
Okay, Mr. Patterson, you're up.
Okay, thank you. Item A10 is a resolution proclaiming February 23rd, which is today, as Spay Day USA, and we had a representative from Animal Services speak briefly. I just wanted to again emphasize how important it is for pet owners to be responsible with their pets and see that they are spayed or neutered or kept out of the social environment of domestic animals, because we have a proliferation of stray dogs and cats throughout the county, particularly in the North County. And we are, as a county, issuing spay-neuter vouchers to pet owners, $40 each. They're available at the Sheriff Substation in Oceano, also at Animal Services out on Kansas Avenue off of Highway 1, and also at the Sheriff Substation in Templeton. So we encourage you to pick those up. The county has allocated $30,000 towards the spay-neuter certificates.
Continue.
And then items 16 and 17, I just wanted to point these out. They are partnerships with Cuesta College. They are funded programs to train individuals for employment. Item 17 is actually training young people for the Clean Energy Workforce Training Program, and they are funds that came available through the federal government as part of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And we are partnering with the Workforce Investment Board and Cuesta College to train people to implement programs for renewable energy and energy efficiency. And I just wanted to point that out to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to touch on A25, which Mayor Pro Tem Higginbotham spoke to, which is letters to our senators and our congresswoman to get further support for the Pismo bluff erosion, which is, as she pointed out, a serious problem and also a regional problem. That's why we have all voted as members of the Council of Governments, and Mayor Scholes and others in the South County recognize that the potential of disaster for this erosion could affect the 101 in the South Corridor, could affect access through to Shell Beach, and so it is a very serious problem, and we're hoping to get as much support as possible.
Thank you. Ditto. With that, I'd entertain a motion
I'll
to
move
the
approval
consent
of the consent agenda.
Let me finish, boys. I entertain a motion to approve the consent. Mr. Patterson.
Yes. I move approval of the consent agenda as amended.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mr. Patterson, seconded by Mr. Asajian. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes. And with that, we are going to shuffle things a bit for those of you that weren't here a little bit earlier. We're going to do a presentation. We have one presentation item on our agenda today, and it's my honor, as one Navy man to another, to make this presentation to Mr. Michael Pippenberg upon his retirement from county service. Sir, my privilege and my honor to read this proclamation, if I could. Whereas Michael Pippenberg began his service to his country by enlisting in the United States Navy in March of 1989, and during his time in service, Mike received several commendations, including the Navy Good Conduct Medal, the National Defense Service Medal, the Meritorious Service Medal, the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal, the Navy Unit Commendation Medal, and the Navy and Marine Corps Commendation Medal. And after 17 years and achieving the highest enlisted rank in the Navy, Command Master Chief, he retired from the United States Navy. And in November of 2003, the County of San Luis Obispo was fortunate enough to hire him away from the Navy to become the county's Veterans Service Officer. And since that time, Mike has provided exemplary leadership to his staff and outstanding public service to nearly 26,000 veterans of the county. So therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors, hereby commends and thanks Mike Pippenberg for his dedicated service to our country, the county, and the county veterans. Mike, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's a picture.
Picture time.
Oh, picture time. All right.
Open it up. Picture is upside down.
Thank you. Thank you. The podium is yours, sir.
I'll be brief. Say we're brief. I'd like to thank the board for giving me the opportunity to work with the county and the 26,000 veterans here. It's been my pleasure, and I really, really appreciate it. It's been exceptionally rewarding taking care of the needs of the veterans here. But I couldn't have done it without my staff. It's the smallest department. We only have four people, but we aid the 26,000 veterans. They do a marvelous job, and I hope your board continues to support them on a daily basis and in these tough budget times as you have in the past. I just want to remind you a couple things. The last year, the claims that they processed brought in over $1.5 million of one-time money and over $2 million worth of continuing money to the veterans in the state, in our county. Also, they brought in the VA-paid veterans compensation in San Luis Obispo County, $25 million, and that's on a recurring basis. So that's a big thing. Also, VA health care provided over $10 million worth of health care to the veterans. So keeping our staff going and assisting the veterans brings a lot of aid to the county veterans, and that money's recirculated throughout the county. So it's really a benefit for the county. And I'd like to thank staff here, Kim and John, who do the brunt of the work. And the other person I'd really like to thank is Nikki. She kept me out of trouble. she keeps all of us out of trouble, so I would really like to thank her, and it's been a pleasure working with all of you. Thank you very much.
I have one, a couple of comments.
Yes,
Mr. Knapp, please.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say that thank you to Mike for his service here. I think he's a true public servant. He's done a wonderful job as vet services officer, and we couldn't be happier with him as a department. So thank you very much, and enjoy the retirement.
But thank you for service to our country, and thank you for all you've done here. And I know that the Veterans Administration will be well served in our area. I'll see to it. I'm a veteran. So
very good. Thank
you, sir. I think I had one request here, Mr. Tim Haley, that wanted to speak to this, I believe.
Is this one working?
Yes, sir.
Well, on behalf of all the veterans in the county, I'd like to thank Mike. Where are you? Mike as well, and your department. You've done a great job for the 26,000 veterans, and I'd love to see the department remain as such. And on a further note, most of you are aware of what the Marine Corps League is doing in the county with the Purple Heart Trail. And this is what the signs are going to look like from San Arno to Los Alamos. The Purple Heart Trail will be designated as such with 10 signs with one sign at San Arno heading south, two signs at 46, two signs at 41, two signs in San Luis, two signs in Santa Maria, and one sign in Los Alamos heading north. And this will be dedicated to all veterans who have been wounded, serving their country, or killed in action. And this will also help lead to veterans' venues throughout the county, museums, and memorials. So this is happening right now. Caltrans is marking the highway as we speak, and fundraising is in motion. So this is a heads up to all you people and the supervisors, and thank you for your support.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much. Thank you. And just to kind of work things backwards, I do need a motion on the presentation. So,
second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now, thank you once again, Mr. Feinberg. I really appreciate all you've done. We're going to move into the public comment portion of our agenda. I have quite a number of requests to speak, so we're going to get started. As I call your name, if you please kind of hit both the podiums, that way we can move this along as expeditiously as possible. Mr. Hans Meger, followed by Becky Jorgensen, please.
sir.
Good morning. I'd like to thank the board for this opportunity to speak on behalf of Sunny Acres. My name is Hans Mager. I am a California registered structural engineer, and I've been asked by Sunny Acres to do the structural retrofit of their stucco barn, which they hope to turn into a residential structure. And it's going to be my job to provide plans and engineering to facilitate retrofitting it to compliance with the current uniform building code. And the main reason for my speaking today is to reassure everyone that this is doable. And there have been numerous suggestions by various parties that it should be torn down, it can't be repaired, and so forth. But I just want to reassure you, it's simply a wood building. Everything is still accessible, and it easily lends itself to amplification with shear panels and seismic connectors and additional beams as needed to make it safe. So I'm available for any questions anyone might have. I'd like to further address the issue of it potentially being in a floodplain. I don't know that it is, but should it turn out that it is, I would also like to say that it would be a simple matter to provide, in a sense, a levee around the building, which would be a concrete block wall, maybe 2-3 feet tall with floodgates, and waterproofing of that system would be similar to the way we currently waterproof buildings in downtown San Luis Obispo, removable floodgates. So if anyone has any questions and would like to reach me, I'm available at my office, 541-2193, and
say that slowly.
541-2193,
is that correct?
541-2193 in San Luis Obispo, okay, where I've had my office since 1976.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Becky Jorgensen, please, followed by Dan Duvall. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Becky Jorgensen, and I'm proud to say that I live and work at Sunny Acres, and I know most of you know me. I'm here today in support of some of our residents who are sitting behind me. And I think it's time that the community heard some real facts about Sunny Acres and how it was that the program really began. The first person to come to Dan's ranch was one of his first classmates, his high school classmates, about 10 years ago. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he was so mentally and emotionally damaged from the war that he couldn't function. And it was the county, it was San Luis Obispo County Mental Health that brought this man out to Dan. After that, they just kept coming, people who were homeless and had nowhere to go, and Dan took them in. He didn't start out to start a clean and sober living program, but people just came to his ranch who had nowhere to live. Since that time, approximately 39% of all of our residents today are still referred by the county. Mental health, drug and alcohol, probation, jail, and the judges themselves. So it's a little confusing to us that the county has, for the past 9 years, referred us legal housing for those people that you refer to us to help. The community should also know that at any given time, I want to put this on the overhead.
He is. You have to give it a moment.
Okay.
You want to continue speaking.
Okay. 39% of our residents today are still referred by the county. And all of this is done with no taxpayers' money. We are completely self-sufficient. The community should also know that at any given time, 75% of our residents on campus are homegrown Central Coast citizens. But the real thing I'd like to point out here are the promises made by the county that if we didn't accept the new board of directors they tried to appoint to Sunny Acres a few months back, even though we already have a board of directors for our nonprofit, that they would cut off the electricity at our road, pay each of our residents $2,000 to leave the campus and Bill Duvall, shut down our program, and once again send our residents back to the streets. I don't know about you, but I call this extortion. The latest promise is County Council stating to us that if we don't drop the civil lawsuit we filed last summer for discrimination against our residents and the county's refusal to let us provide shelter for the indigent, since you can't, that the county will not honor any of the negotiations they have made with us to allow us to build legal housing for our residents. Again, I call this extortion. On our webpage are the words, your webpage, the Board of Supervisors webpage, that the board is committed to the implementation of such policies and services that will enhance the economic, environmental, and social quality of life in San Luis Obispo County.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
I would like to ask that you include all lives.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here you go, if you want.
I gave it to you already.
Mr. Duvall, please, followed by Mr. Lombardini. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Dan Duvall. I'm the founder of Sunny Acres. I live at 10660 Los Osos Valley Road. Thank you, Chairman Makem and Board of Supervisors, for allowing me to speak this morning. Throughout the last several months, we have been working with County Council and Council hired from Sacramento, Terrence Cassidy, to work out negotiations for how Sunny Acres could progress forward. We've done wonderful in those negotiations. They've talked about letting us build a 6,000 square foot residence. We have made many other negotiations which would lead to putting all of the building code violations or whatever problems on the property aside so that we could go ahead on a clean bill of health. Unfortunately, in the discussion, it has come up that, and I believe that you are going to be presented today, the fact that the county would go ahead with these negotiations if Sunny Acres would drop our writ of mandate. We feel that this is unfair. There is no reason that we can't go forward with the negotiations without dropping the writ of mandate. All of these negotiations that we have made are things that should have been allowed at Sunny Acres for the last 9 years. This isn't some behind-the-scenes deal. This is things that should have been happening 9 years ago. There's absolutely no reason that they can't go forward. As far as the writ of mandate, this is what's happened between Sunny Acres and the county for the last 9 years. And this needs to be straightened out also. The two are separate issues. We need to be able to go ahead with our clients. Sunny Acres is very much needed in this county. The county is very aware of the homeless problem, but more importantly, problems with mental health, and a number of things that we can do at Sunny Acres that aren't being performed by other agencies. I hope that you'll consider this in closed session, and I hope that we can go forward. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Duvall. Mr. Lombardini, followed by Darcene Clayton, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Matt Lombardini, and thank you for allowing me to come here and speak today. Basically, I'm here as a supporter and a volunteer for Sunny Acres. What I want to share with you is just what I've experienced out there and what I've witnessed. And essentially, that is that I've seen people helped. I've seen people turn their lives around. And I've witnessed what I would call sort of a family atmosphere that I think is unique. I think that Sunny Acres offers something that some of the other programs in the county maybe don't offer. I think that one program complements the other. So in my opinion, there's room for all. And I want to really strongly encourage the board to move forward with Dan Duvall and Sunny Acres and work something out so that he can have the legal housing he has been seeking for the last 9 years, and so that the program can really come to fruition. I think it's a model for something that addresses a certain percentage of the homeless population that other models don't address, and so in terms of that, I think it's viable and doable. I don't always necessarily agree with every tactic Dan takes, but I think that his heart is definitely in the right place, and I think that the potential is enormous. I think his offer to give 10 acres to the county to donate 10 acres of his property to Sunny Acres to give the county another venue for homeless people to be at is tremendous. I think it's something that should really be looked at and taken seriously. In terms of the structural issues out there. I don't know a whole lot about that. I know that I've been in some of those buildings, and to me, they seem very habitable. They seem like they're a far cry from where these people are coming from, which is mostly out of the creeks. And I think that all these things need to be taken into consideration. So I just, I'm here, like I said, as a supporter and to encourage you to really look at this issue and work with Mr. Duvall to come to some conclusion that works for everybody and that continues to help the people that he has been helping.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Darcene Clayton, please, followed by Robert Jenkins. Good morning, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me this time to speak. My name is Darcene Clayton, and I am been here at Sunny Acres for over 3 years. I see some new and old faces here. I'd like to thank the public for listening to us. I'm here on some still very old issues. I'd like to thank Mr. Duvall for allowing me a safe and clean and sober environment to live in where there are no drugs allowed and alcohol. I have been battling for 20, 30 years of my life with drug and alcohol. I've been clean and sober now for over 10 years. During that time that I've been at Sunny Acres, I've been able to help others with their battle with sobriety, and I am honored with the people that are here today and with the others that are still at home, back at home at Sunny Acres with that, and it is an incredible thing to watch them every day struggle and succeed at it, and it's because of Sunny Acres. There's no other program in the world like it. And it's nice to be able to have that feeling of knowing that tomorrow when I wake up, my home is still going to be there in my little trailer that I fixed up and made it into such a wonderful place for me to live. Code enforcement has not been able to come out in the last 6 months and harass and terrorize me. I've been able to actually be able to spend time with my grandchildren and my family. If they were to come out and kick me out tomorrow or in the future, I would be on the streets and I would not be able to survive. I would die. I would be dead. This human being that stands in front of you could not survive on the streets. And I would have nowhere else to go. It is Sunny Acres, the only place for me to live. I am 5150. I have a broken spine. But I've taken my 5150 and turned it into productivity. And with that, I've shown other women that have come there with the same emotional problems or close to it to achieve that also, that in their time, that they can also be that. And I hope to inspire for myself, for my family and my grandchildren and their friends and the people that come to Sunny Acres and to help that. I hope to inspire you and each and every one of you that you have somebody in your family members that have been hurt and destroyed or are living on the streets or a cousin or a close friend that may not have electricity or someplace to go to the bathroom in, but it's nice to be able to have that. It's clean. We have people there every day working to fix that place up. You need to get to behind us and help us, not deter us. We don't take any money from the county. We accept no services, no money from the government. Where else can that be? Where else does a man open his home and allow people like myself to come live? I want to thank you for letting me speak. Please remember that I am one of the sick and I am ill emotionally and physically, but I am able to serve this community and be productive.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time. And I want to thank
Mr.
the other clients of Sunny Acres also.
Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please, if you would. Mr. Jenkins, followed by Mr. Shaley, I believe it is. Sir?
Yes, Mr. Supervisor. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Robert Gene Jenkins. I've lived in this county for 26 years. I have had an alcohol and drug problem since I was 18 years old. I moved from Southern California up to the Central Coast. To make a long story short, I've lived in the creeks. I have bipolar problems. I'm just trying the best I can to work with mental health. And I thank Dan Duvall for providing a place for me to live and work and do a positive thing to keep me busy, because I need to keep busy rather than be on the streets doing what I was doing. Anyway, law enforcement supports that, and mental health supports that, and I want to do everything I can to create a better living situation for myself and others there at Sunny Acres. I really, I have a lot of different talents that I can, you know, help Sunny Acres with, and just to, you know, be straight up with you, you know, I'm just doing the best I can, and that's about all I got to say.
Thank you. I appreciate
your time.
Thank you, and good luck to you.
All right, thank you, sir.
Shaley, please. I believe I hope I pronounced that correctly, and followed by Mr. James Latt. Morning, sir.
Hello, my name is Donald Shea. I've been a resident here since 1989. I'm an alcoholic. I've done a considerable amount of drinking. Might even go so far as to call me the town drunk. I find refuge, Sunny Acres. It's the only place I can go where I don't drink, because there are people out there that aren't drinking. It's hard not to drink when you have other people drinking around you. That's one place I can go and not drink and build. Become a better person. So I just want to thank Dan Duvall and the other people out there for helping me. And I hope you people can do everything you can to keep it rolling. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Good luck to you as well.
Thank you.
Black, please. Followed by Anthony McDuffie. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to wish, thank you for letting me come and speak. Council members, you and your family, best in the coming year. Take care of the nuclear issues with the plant there. I saw we got going on some kind of permits or something. I'm a little worried. I'd like to say that the property that Dan Duvall lives on, where I've been a resident since 2002, over the past year, it has cleaned up. And the highway between Foothill and Sunny Acres is one of the cleanest highways in the whole county. If you ever drive down at the trash and litter, you won't see nothing. Many people consider the Duvall Ranch as an eyesore. Some people consider it a historic landmark and are very interested in what goes on there. Most of our neighbors buy firewood from us and produce that we grow out there. And what's good about it out there is Dan will give anybody a chance who wants to have a better life and get away from alcohol and drugs. And I'm waiting. I don't know. I'm 58. I'm getting old. Been coming up here a long time. For today, that y'all have an award for helping the homeless for Dan Duvall. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McDuffie, please, followed by Serenity Jones. Good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning. My name is Anthony McDuffie. I am a proud resident at Sunny Acres. I've been a resident for 3 months since December 9th of 2009. I would like to start off by personally addressing Mr. Duvall my gratitude on being given the opportunity to reside at Sunny Acres. When I first arrived, in total sincerity, I was not sure of what I'd expect when I first arrived. I was honest to God worried that in turn I would not measure up to standards of being eligible upon being admitted to the establishment. The day I arrived, he had asked me several questions such as how I came and what kind of skills I had and if I truly had the desire to quit drinking. And I answered all three of these questions honestly without doubt of mind and clarity. At first, I had thought that I would still have my job at Denny's, but being laid off had changed things a bit. But still, Dan had let me stay. And also, I appreciate him being very patient for my rent, as I am waiting for my financial aid status to come through, so I can't properly address my gratitude towards that. Before I even considered coming to Sunny Acres, I had working for Denny's restaurant in Pismo Beach for almost 3 years. I had a steady paycheck, decent home, and I was renting with several roommates. For most part of things were fairly decent, even though I wasn't making up to par, but I was getting by. After some time, some roommates had problems with providing their share of the rent and left us with unpaid portions, so we lost some luxuries such as cable and internet, followed by electricity. And then my hours were cut drastically and I couldn't afford rent, so I moved out and stayed at close friends and family places for designated periods of time, and then I started drinking heavily, being depressed for working less than 10 hours a week. After 3 months of couch surfing at various houses and places, I had exhausted all the resources I had. Most of the money I had earned, I had spent on beer or liquor, and most of the homes I had stayed had let me know that I wore out my welcome. While working one day, I was on break and reading the New Times, and I came across an article on Sunny Acres. I went online and read the information on the website. and after a little deliberation, I had decided to check in. I was hesitant because I wanted to keep my job at Denny's, so I transferred to the one in SLO, which I later been laid off. At first, I was a little concerned and nervous at first, but I made an effort to follow the rules and directives, attend all the regular meetings required, and work on the property when I was needed. I found that all the facilities on the premises were satisfactory, if not above my standards, most things being more functional, convenient, and adequate than most of my prior living arrangements. The management staff in Sunny Acres are exceptionally helpful in many ways, like letting me know various rules and regulations when I did not know, or explaining how a particular job was to be performed. They have successfully mediated all things to me in a very professional manner, and were very helpful in answering questions I had. The best part is that I had been given the opportunity to attend Cuesta College with some of my other residents at the Sunny Acres. Thanks to Mr. Duvall, I have a roof over my head, an environment with facilities that provide more than basic needs such as warm showers, television, kitchen, and internet capabilities. Living quarters that make it possible to stay sober, which I find easier said than done, and to be the first in five generations of my family to attend college.
Good luck to you, young man.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Please, Ms. Sandy Jones, please, and then we are going to be moving into Los Osos. Good morning, young lady.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Dan, for giving me a home. Sunny Acres has been my home for a year now. I have ran away from Sunny Acres several times when I start to get better. Now that I've been there for a while, I've got some clean time, and I'm able to stand here today only because of Sunny Acres. If not for my home, I wouldn't be here. I would be down in the creek, and I would be high, and I would be selling drugs, and I would not be a member of society. But because Sunny Acres is there, and because Dan Duvall let me come back, I am a human being. We have emotions out there. We have physical and emotional needs that are met. I have a warm bed to sleep in. I have a roof over my head. I have food. And it's because of Dan Duvall that we all have this. Please don't take our home. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want to just thank you, folks. I want to conclude by just mentioning that these were all the folks that wanted to speak on that one particular item. But I want to thank you all for coming out and being very respectful in your comments, and we do appreciate that, and we will take it all into consideration. Thank you very much. We're going to move into the second phase of our public comment. This is relative to Los Osos. First will be Mr. Ben DeFada, followed by Julie Tacker. Good morning, sir.
My name is Ben DeFada, Los Osos. I'm willing to cut my speech a little short. And Mr. Duvall, it's got to be a saint somewhere. Saint Duvall is, today we ought to practice that date forever. I want to point out the total failures that you guys have done to Los Osos. Going back a few years, it was you supervisors and dreamers that caused all of these problems and delays for building a sewer project for Los Osos. In the meantime, this county continued to give out over 1,100 building permits, even though you were well aware that we had a seawater intrusion problem, even after knowing the water board accused the property owners in this county of leaking septic tanks into the aquifer. You failed when you decided to build it in the center of town. You even said the plant would be buried 38 feet below ground level, then ended up 38 feet above ground level. You failed when you decided to dispose and to recharge the aquifer in dune sand high above homes and lives at the Broderson site, endangering those property and lives of people, property owners, when you decided to dispose of 800,000 gallons a day. Now it's down to 375,000 gallons or less a day as proposed by the Planning Commission. You failed when you decided to use the very expensive gravity collection component in dune sand with its large pipes that are prone to leaking a long period of time before the leaks are discovered. You even said you can't cross a creek with a sewer pipe. Then other supervisors, Gibson and Pablo, watched you two alone woke up one morning without discussion, decided to place a treatment plant way out of Los Osos Basin, taking up as much as 643 acres of good agricultural land when 50 acres was ample. Then you decided to spray it in the air. Then you two proposed to haul away sludge, three truckloads a week, to who knows where. Chairman Meacham and others, if you were president of a company wasting stockholders' money, and stockholders' money, and in this case, this county's taxpayers' money, would you fire a whole bunch of them before the company goes broke? Is this any way to run a company or a county? I want to see them out of here before they waste another $7 million for more faulty studies with the chummy engineering construction buddies. Please get rid of them. They do not know what they are doing. The above shows those that approved their proposals are incompetent, misguided, or need to go back to school and learn about new technologies. For coming this November, many more politicians will be looking for a job. I'm sorry I screwed it all up. Mr. Duval's thing got to my heart.
Thank you, Mr. Bottom. Julie Tacker, please, followed by Mr. Barrow. Good morning.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker. I am from Los Osos, and I am speaking about the wastewater project. You know, there's not been a Los Osos wastewater project since November 3rd. Maybe you don't miss it, but we do. And not even the website has been updated, and some things have happened with regard to the project over the last several months. At the November 3rd wastewater project update, your board advanced the project another $250,000. That money has been scheduled to have been spent, and we'd like to see an accounting of it. Speaking of accounting, my accounting of the county staff that attended the Coastal Commission's substantial issue hearing numbered 8. We had Pavo Ogren, John Waddell, John Diodati, Mark Hutchinson, Warren Jensen, Tim McNulty, Murray Wilson, and Mr. Bruce Gibson all in attendance. Their per diem, their meals, their lodging, all on the back of the project. Only Mr. Gibson and Mr. Hutchinson were allowed to speak that day. It seems many of them traveled unnecessarily. We'd like to see the USDA grant that has been bannered about, and we'd like to see what the terms of that grant are. You know, grants come with strings attached. What is this grant going to give our community, and what are we agreeing to? The concerns list from the Coastal Commission is lengthy. First portrayed as somewhat short list, but just as you peel an onion, the more you learn, the more you want to know. And I think that's what's going to happen with the Coastal Commission. And as far as a wastewater project update, we'd like to see what issues are being addressed exactly, to what depth they'll be presented and analyzed, what's it going to cost, and who is doing the work. And I hope that when we do get a project update, that those questions will be answered and that your board will be just as interested as we are.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow, please, followed by Jeff Edwards. Morning, sir.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. I want to speak on the cost of the proposed preferred project that you selected for Los Osos. And one of your studies on Table 1-1, they restate the potential cost range of the project. Bottom line is that STEG could come in at $45.5 million, collection, treatment, and disposal. Well, according to the information given at the assessment, the 218 vote prior to it, the cost of the project for the county's gravity system was estimated at $165 million. That's a considerable difference. That's a difference of $120 million. We don't have to go to Washington to save money. We can just choose the viable project, which is the most protective project according to the prior EIR. And even if you look at the EIR, it states, my time is not running.
More power to you. Well, I guess you can just keep right on rolling, Mr. Barrow. It's your lucky day.
It is now.
Just a little housekeeping.
Can you speed
there.
That clock up a little bit? Go
so
ahead, sir.
Bottom line is that we're looking at a potential savings of over $120 million by choosing a project which is considered a viable alternative and quite protective of the environment. So it brings a bias problem into the discussion. If this is a co-equal analysis, why is there bias in it? Because the county stated that the low end of step or gravity and the high end of step are equal. In other words, there's really not much difference. But yet when the county met with Orenco, which is a leading step stag experts in the world, they were told this information, but it never got out to the public. $120 million savings is a humongous amount compared to $15 million grant that the USDA is proposing. We really need to go back and take a look at these costs. And we really need to have the experts from the step stag industry testify to you. And there are at least four other companies besides Orenco that have stated that this project could be installed for under $45 million, including collection, treatment, and disposal and on-lot costs. In your $165 million figure, you do not include the on-lot costs for the gravity, which is roughly estimated at $2,000 a property or $10 million. And the step of estimate included change orders. There was no change orders required. That was going to be the total cost, $45 million. Not so with the gravity, which would have included more money for change orders when you run into dewatering or other problems, so on like that. So I'd like to thank you for giving me a little extra time. And I wish you would look at this $120 million figure and the bias that was created by it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, you only have a minute because he took your two. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Followed by Glenn Taylor.
Board members, hello. My name is Jeff Edwards from Los Osos. I wanted to make some observations regarding last week's discussion. A1 discussed the county budget for 2010-2011. And that's a $24 million shortfall, is what I recall. A lot was discussed about cuts, and more cuts. And I'd like to respectfully submit maybe a different spin. And that's, how does the county expand revenues? What are the various options? And I have just a couple ideas, but I'm sure there are others. And one is the county-owned Oceano Airport. That airport represents an underutilized asset. It has enormous potential in terms of ongoing, reoccurring revenue for the county. It's a wonderful site that could be redeveloped. And I think it would behoove the county to look at the options for that. It would not only create revenues for the county, but create an economic stimulus for not only Oceano, but the entire Five Cities area. Another revenue source is vacation rentals. And I know this board has struggled most recently with an application in Los Osos. Right now, TOT brings in $6 plus million to this county. About $1 million of that is related to vacation rentals, residential vacation rentals. And in a time where we're not going to see many hotels built, I think you have enormous potential to increase transient occupancy tax through residential vacation rentals. And I would submit that you could probably double your existing revenue if you could create a simplified permit process. And I think that's crucial to this. You're going to see a lot of vacation rentals go underground if there's not a simplified, viable process that they can go through. So there's a couple ideas there. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about item D1, which was the infrastructure planning question. And, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Hill posed framed a very good question at that discussion. And what he asked is, how do we allocate infrastructure costs between existing development and new development? And I think it's, again, a great question. Supervisor Gibson at the time referenced AB 1600, which is codified as Section 66,000 in the government code, and that's okay for new development, but how do we allocate existing infrastructure deficiencies to existing development? And that's the tough question, and I would close by using Los Osos as a case study in this situation, and that we're in a 462 acre foot water deficit right now caused by the existing development. And the wastewater project is the perfect opportunity to zero out that seawater intrusion and make the community whole with regard to
water. And it actually wasn't 25 million, it's 18 to 19. Thanks. Ms. Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen, please.
Good morning, my name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos, the Prohibition Zone. There are numerous money issues in our community of Los Osos. Layoffs, furloughs, bankruptcies, foreclosures, the increase in the utilities from gas, electric, water, to phone. Then there is the upcoming sewer, not just the sewer, but the cost of the laterals, decommissioning the septic tanks, removing and replacing landscaping, just to name a few. The cost of the sewering and the desperate need to protect our groundwater basin before it becomes another cost is a problem. The community's finances are being stretched to the breaking point. It is time the board removed the barriers of their thinking to take advantage of new and smart ways of sewering our community with smart planning and cost efficiency. Sanitary sewers overflow and are costly, and they are old-fashioned gravity systems that contribute major overflow problems not only to the cities but to this county. They are costly. We need to address this before we get trapped in the same situation that other communities are trapped in. The Water Quality Control Board is not forgiving for overflow of sewers. We are all going to have to pay if this happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Lindy Owen, please, followed by Nina Gabrielle, please.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I'd first like to definitely put in a support for the Spay Day USA, and thank you for the funds that you do donate to the community to get some of the animals that we can spayed and neutered so that we can start stopping this horrific overpopulation problem we have. And I would just like to encourage anyone who loves animals, please contribute to spaying and neutering any animal that you can get hold of. And then I wanted to go in. I really appreciated what Al Barrow said, that you don't have to go to Washington to save money, and he's absolutely right. That's why I've spent 10 years coming to this podium to address that problem. And it kind of goes into the subject that was in the Tribune about the award, the awarding of a $28 million upgrade to the Morro Bay sewer plant. But what I'd like, there's a little bit more going on behind that headline, and I don't think it was clear. It isn't clear to the public. What happened in Morro Bay is Carollo Engineering, the same group that have taken $7 million of our money to come up with a very flawed project, were also hired in Morro Bay to look at their upgrade. They had to meet the tertiary effluent disposal into the ocean. Well, what I think is really saddening to me is that Carollo could have looked. They spent 2 years and several million dollars doing studies. Then they discovered that they were in a floodplain and that the existing plant could not be upgraded. It actually needed to be rebuilt. The next step was to say, well, we could do eminent domain, take the property next door, spend another couple million raising it up off the ground, and we could just rebuild the same plant there with the upgrades. Well, that's one way of looking at it. What we proposed at one of their meetings, the joint power agreement meetings, was that why not stop what you're doing right now, take that plant, go inland, find an appropriate piece of land to build a state-of-the-art sewer, or rebuild the same piece of junk if you want. But there's a shortage of water, and the idea that that water is being treated to tertiary and then thrown in the ocean is absolutely obscene in a drought-ridden California. And what the option and the potential and the creative direction would have been was to build that plant inland and then to take that water and divert it over to, for ag reuse, where currently farmers are having to pay to truck water in to keep their crops going during the end of the drought. Right now, I know we're in the rain period. So that's the kind of brilliant designing and creative energy that comes from Corollo Engineering and Montgomery Watson Harza, to speak, to add them in, because they're all the same, really. This is corporatism.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nina Gabriel, please, followed by Eric Greening. Good morning, young lady.
Hi, Nina Gabriel, Oceano. Last week I presented you with a DVD called America, Freedom to Fascism, and this week I'd like to give you one called Fall of the Republic. And let me just give it to you real quick.
You can just give them to the clerk and she'll pass them down if you will. Okay, then.
Okay, and you know, I hope you got to watch the last one I gave you, and I hope you watch this one. I'm trying to educate you guys, because I don't think you people get it. I don't know how much you are aware of what's happening on the global scale, on the national scale, statewide, or even within your own county. But so I'm just trying to help you guys get up to speed, because I can tell, like I said last time, I've been watching these meetings for a long, long time on television, and it's gotten to the point where, hey, you know what, you got to get out there and get these guys on the ball. So because I can tell you guys, you're out of touch. You really are, and it's sad to see. Because what I see is people giving themselves raises and cutting services and making life hard for people that they're getting that raise from. And that's not right. It's not right. It's not appropriate. It's not what this country's all about. Public servants are supposed to be that, the servants. And it really bothers me to keep hearing this whole Duval thing keep coming up. I wasn't planning on addressing that, but, you know, I just feel like that's been going on for so long, and it's just from an outside perspective, you know, because I don't own that property, have nothing to do with it, and I'm not, you know, hired by the county. But just as an outside person watching this thing come up time and time again, year after year, sitting in my living room at home, I realize it just feels like somebody is harassing somebody because they want that land or what's going on. You got somebody who's trying to do something nice and decent for other people, and it seems like the county is not helping out. It's just harassing people. And that's not your job. You know, when people go to that ballot box and they put that little check mark next to your name, they don't say, hey, yeah, you know, I want these people to put the squeeze on me and my fellow man. That's not what you're hired to do. And that's not why we allow you to give yourself a raise. So I think people, you guys, you should watch some of these videos I'm giving you and maybe just do a little bit of reflection as to what are you guys all about? What is governance all about? What is America all about? Because America is not about big government putting a squeeze on individuals. It's the opposite. It's about government, governing bodies, helping people be all they can be. That's all I can say.
Thank you. Just for your information, we didn't give ourselves a raise. We actually cut our salary. Eric Green, followed by Katrina Dolinsky, please.
Thank you. Good morning, and
good morning.
Just with reference to the last speaker, it is interesting to note we're approaching the 100th anniversary of the creation of the so-called Federal Reserve. I don't know about celebrating, but think what a dollar was worth then and what it's worth now. It kind of shows you what it's gotten us. Anyway, speaking of dollars, I want to give thanks for the strategic planning session you held last week relative to the county budget and essentially planning and anticipating, and now you'll be dealing department by department. Some of the questions I asked then were answered, and some of them are still pending, and I want to focus on the health department today because it was singled out for disproportionate cuts. And I know you'll be focusing on that in late March, and Before that happens, the Health Commission will be taking a look at it on the evening of the 8th, and so I'm hoping the staff is prepared with the answers to these questions and others that I'm hoping you are collecting and forwarding to them so that the full picture is available to yourselves and the public as it develops. But I did not hear a justification for this 10% cut, for treating this department differently. I heard a sort of a justification relative to the roads budget, which is you can get away with maintaining the roads less in for a few years before it gets bad, and then assuming you have more resources, you can catch up. That kind of neglects the issue of layoffs if the people who are doing that work are off the payroll, but I can see the justification, and I can go with it to the extent I support other sources than the general fund for maintaining the roads. We need to get driver-specific sources in there. Regardless, you can't make the same statement about health care. A person with a health issue, you can't just let it deteriorate for a few years and hope that it hasn't gotten so bad that you can't go back and fix it later. Not only does the human health not necessarily work that way, there's the equation of suffering involved. So what exactly is the justification for treating health differently? And then another unanswered question, 10% of what? Is it 10% of the entire budget, or is it 10% of that part over which we have direct control? Then it would be good to review the impacts of the current cuts. For example, have they closed the Paso Robles Mental Health Clinic? Are the people there getting to the Atascadero Clinic? It's about a third of a mile from the nearest Route 9 stop, half a mile from the nearest North County shuttle. It is within the ADA zone for those who have ADA, but do they know that? Do they have the information? Are they getting appointments? That's just an example of the kind of information we should be digesting.
Thank you very much. Ms. Belinsky, please, and my last request is from Daniela Arnon, please.
Thank you.
Good morning.
My name is Katrina Delinsky, and I'm a recently returning resident to San Luis Obispo County in the Pomo Mesa.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. My husband and I moved up here from L.A. area, and we looked for a quality of life that obviously we didn't have in L.A. Well, of course, coming back here as a cyclist and an avid outdoors person, I realized that this is the place to be. However, things have changed greatly in the past 15 years since I've been gone. And when I worked here as a probation officer for San Luis Obispo County and went to school here for graduate studies at Cal Poly, things were very different then as far as air quality. And now we are terribly impacted by the air quality now in the Pomo Mesa where we live. We reside about a mile from the dunes, the Oceana Dunes, and there is no break. And the new study report that came out last night from the Air Quality or the Air Pollution Control District conclusively shows the evidence of ATV or off-road vehicles impacting this area with disturbing the crust and sending a plume of this particulate matter into the air. I can see that. I didn't know when we came here. I didn't know what the stuff was that was coming over on windy days. It's like a brown wave that kind of engulfed us. And we have wind up there every afternoon. And so we are impacted on a daily basis when it's not raining. And the dunes are being impacted by the off-road vehicles and not allowing the vegetation to keep the crust together so that these particulate matter is not airborne. Now, I know it boils down to a basic question that we have to decide of economics and health. I know that this brings the ATV business here, but we don't manufacture ATVs, do we, in San Luis Obispo County? It's the local tourism that's brought. Other communities, beach communities, have grappled with the same notions of what to do. How do we turn tourism, make it economically feasible and viable? And I'm interested in that, too, because I think that brings families here to the beach, the dunes. But families with children can't walk on the beach because they're going to be run over by the off-road vehicles. So we kind of have to grapple with that idea as well as balance the idea of healthful air that we all can breathe. And not just for people coming to the area but also people who work here and recreate here and live here. And I'm one of the residents that is part of a group called Mesa for Clean Air that's just forming. And I'm asking you to consider this. I know things will be a workshop coming up in a very short time, and I'm available at escultura2 at AOL.com if you need to contact me. Escultura. Thank you very much.
My last request is from Daniela Aronon, please.
Hi. Before I start my time, may I just ask if item C1 is still on the agenda?
It's still on the agenda, but it's and we'll discuss it, but okay. It'll be brief. It's going to be requested to be pulled.
Okay. So I think some of the audience members are here for that.
And it would be nice
for them to know.
Right. I have to go sequentially through this.
So will it be reintroduced?
Well, you've already got started on your minute, so go ahead. Yes, okay. It will be introduced.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Meacham and supervisors and everyone else. I really stand behind what Lindy and Owen and Al Barrow have been saying, and I hope that more and more we will look at how we do projects in this county using the idea of low-impact development, and also a great idea is watershed literacy. In fact, we could refill the aquifers in Los Osos if we used principles of low-impact development. They're permaculture principles, but they're also ancient principles of it sort of looks like terracing, where you build swales on contour, and it slows the water and spreads it and sinks it back into the land, back into the ground, instead of the water running into the streams and the oceans. Only 2% of the Earth's water is sweet water. The rest is salt water. So it's a shame for this water to go into the ocean. And also it's a real shame to put treated wastewater into the creeks and the oceans and into the taps. Conventional sewers are no longer considered the best technology. So the EPA has approved composting toilets, Clivus Multrum toilets. I think they're using them a lot in Wisconsin. And the idea of the waterless toilet is amazing. It could save California so much water. It's a tragedy to be mixing drinking water with solids. Solids in nature are supposed to dry out and become soil or fertilizer. We should never be mixing water with solids to begin with. In Scandinavia and in Mexico, they're using dry toilets. And they separate the urine from the solids, because that becomes fertilizer. Even in the office buildings in Scandinavia, they collect the urine. They have a toilet design that separates the urine. They collect it in the basement, and then diluted 3 or 4 times becomes fertilizer, non-fossil fuel fertilizer. So what we create when we mix solids and liquids together and we add a lot of water and then we have to use lots of chemicals to treat it, we're creating a huge amount of toxins. And I really hope that you guys can look at this holistically and that we can educate ourselves in the community and you on watershed literacy, because it all goes together. And I wish that they changed Bioneers from Tuesdays 1 to 1:30. It's an excellent show on public radio. Unfortunately, it's Tuesdays. I hope they change it so you can hear it.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your comments. That concludes the public comment portion for things that are not on the agenda. I've been asked to take a break, and when the clerk asks to take a break, you take a break. So we're going to take 10 minutes. You need 10 minutes or 5? 10 minutes. We'll be back at 20 minutes to 11, please. I don't know how I'm going to be able to do it, because we've got closed session as well. I don't know. Let me get started so we can get moving. Okay, I'm going to bring the meeting back to order if I could, please. And Madam Clerk, if you'd please introduce the first item for our discussion.
Item C1 is consideration of a letter delaying the relicensing application for Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant until the seismic studies have been completed. Recommend approval.
Thank you. Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm requesting that we pull this item and continue it to March 9th. I have submitted this letter under my letterhead and under my signature to the NRC, and they are receipt of it. But before the board is to have a full discussion on this, I think it's appropriate that Supervisor Gibson be with us. He's not here today, so that would allow us time. We also have another letter that we're submitting, which I think is on next week's agenda, supporting PG&E's application to the PUC for the seismic studies. And so I'd request that that would be pulled from that agenda, combined with this discussion, and come back on the 9th to do it. That would be my preference as a supervisor of the district that the plant resides in.
Yes, and I support that request, Mr. Chair. However, I know a number of people came this morning to speak specifically to the item, so I would hope that we could entertain public comment for those that are here.
Okay. With that, and Supervisor Patterson's correct, some of you are here to speak to this issue, and I'll allow that. However, there will be no action taken on this today. This is going to be continued to the March 9th meeting. So if you still are so inclined to speak, and I need your slips as soon as I can, please. The last-minute slips is becoming a little more difficult to gather, and I... So, those of you that wish to speak on this, I'm going to go ahead and allow it. Mr. Jones first, followed by Mr. Greening.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Tom Jones representing Pacific Gas and Electric Company. Given the motion for continuance, I'll truncate my remarks and let you know that I am here representing us from the public policy's perspective. If you have specific questions, and with me is Lauren Sharp, our Senior Director of Engineering Services. Both our seismic programs, our long-term seismic program, and the license renewal team both report to Mr. Sharp. He'll join me again on the 9th when you continue that discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Patterson. Yes, a question for Mr. Jones. Should anyone want to address PG&E specifically regarding the relicensing issue, who would be the contact person for PG&E?
Send them directly to me. My email address is tpj2@pge.com, or they can call me anytime. My phone number is 595-6340.
Very good. Thank you.
Did I get that? Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Greening, please, followed by Willow Walking Turtle, please.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and since you're going to have a hearing on the substance of the letter, I will withhold remarks on that and just speak to the issue of the continuance. I certainly am supportive. District 2 and District 3 basically meet in that area, so I think it is important to have the District 2 supervisor and the full board available for that discussion. The one question I would make before you continue, I understand that there are to be some scoping hearings on this relicensing on March 3rd, and when I originally saw the schedule of this letter, I was assuming it was something to be presented in the context of that scoping meeting, and maybe it wasn't, but if there's no action until March 9th, and I support, essentially, if there's no action on this, then presumably there'd be no action on any other relevant letter. I presume then anyone from the supervisors would be speaking as an individual or listening as an individual if they participate in that scoping hearing. Would that be correct? Just wanted to be sure. And just wanted to be sure everyone knew that there were the scoping hearings, and you might want to announce that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I do think that that's an accurate assumption. Willow Walking Turtle, please, followed by Andy Christie. Andrew Christie.
Good morning. Earth-loving greetings. Little Walking Turtle, longtime resident of San Luis. I want to give a disclaimer why I have lived as an anti-nuclear activist. My father died of cancer at the age of 52. He was called an atomic soldier. The government sent military men to Nagasaki and Hiroshima to mop up and gave them no protective gear whatsoever. I cannot not speak about this issue. I feel supporting the relicensing of Diablo remains as draconian and antiquated thinking as supporting the Harza Montgomery Watson water-based sewer plant in Los Osos, supported by practically all of you. Both juggernaut projects tear at the fabric of the web of life. They promote water devastation and desertification. They create unmitigatable wastes in perpetuity, and they need huge outlays of climate-changing fossil fuels to transport them away, and we know no way exists. Neither of these projects remain sustainable. They require gross government subsidies, corporate fixes, and they euchre the taxpayer. And how many of you know that nuclear power exists mainly for the military-industrial big pharma complex to create weapons called depleted uranium? And water-based sewer systems prop up the sludge industry, keeping the water wars going. We've heard this phrase, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. We hope you'll do that and listen to us. And there's healthy alternatives exist for Diablo. We would like to see it transformed into a wind farm. And we'd like to see Los Osos no longer exist as a flush and forget community, donning waterless composting toilet technology where our kin can learn new ways of living and giving back to Mother Earth what we have taken from her. And I've lived in a situation where I have lived with a Clivus Maltram composting toilet, and it was wonderful. And it does create wonderful fertilizer in about a year's time. So I ask you, please do not support any more any kind of poison power. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Christie, followed by Daniela Arnon, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, honorable board members. I'm Andrew Christie. I am director of the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. We will withhold comments until your March 9th hearing, other than to express our full support for the draft letter that you have before you to send to the NRC, and our hope that you will all appear at the scoping hearings on March 3rd to speak individually on that subject. Thank you.
Danielle Arnon, followed by Nina Gabrielle, please. This is my last request.
Daniela Arnon, San Luis Obispo. I encourage people to get familiar with Arjun Makajani, PhD's work. He wrote a book, and also there are shorter versions, Carbon Free and Nuclear Free. And I really think it's a good idea to what you're doing to postpone the relicensing until the seismic studies are done. But I also hope you will consider, we have so much sun and wind here. We don't need nuclear power, and we're leaving 250,000 plus years of toxic waste to future generations. And we have wonderful resources. The Rosebud Reservation alone in South Dakota, they did studies. They could produce 12% of the energy needs of the United States on that reservation alone. So look at the potential here. So I'd really, really encourage you to think of ways of, let's clean up our act and work with Transition Town. And it's amazing the opportunity we have right now. And I hope you will not allow, I hope that there will be no relicensing. Thank you.
Thank you. Nina Gabrielle, followed by Sherry Lewis, and that'll be the last request. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Nina Gabrielle Oceano. You know, I just want to let you know, I was present at the first time that the NRC had a public meeting with the public over in Avila, and I asked a question of one of the NRC panel members there. It was all supposedly NRC scientists and so forth who were supposed to answer our questions, which they really didn't answer a lot of questions. But I asked one on the side. Actually, what I told them was, you know, I've lived by the ocean my entire life. You can sit there on the coast, you can sit on the beach, and you can watch the waves come in. And they come in sets, And you can, they come in pretty evenly with as far as the height of the wave and the spacing between the waves and stuff. And, you know, if you're a surfer or a diver or anything, you kind of gauge that. You learn how to do that, how to work with the water. But every once in a while, you get a sleeper wave that's bigger than all the rest. And I told him, I said, that power plant is built out there on a fault line. And I know you're going to scream up and down and yell at me and tell me that it can only go up to 7, you can only get a 7.0 earthquake, and that's it. That's where your studies, what your studies show. Well, you know what? There ain't no guarantees with Mother Nature. And who's to say that we're not going to get something bigger than a 7.0 earthquake out there on that fault? Yeah, question was also asked at that time, who on that panel lives within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant? Only one person raised their hand, and that was a person who was actually working at our local plant. All those other guys who came from across the nation, none of them live within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant. And yet they're going to tell us, the people in the communities who do live within 100 miles of a power plant, that it's safe. That they don't reflect that in where they live, do they? I'm not going to talk about, you know, whether I'm for or against nuclear power plant, but because, you know, maybe there is an appropriate place. But I will say this also, you know, other countries that do utilize nuclear power use their use those rods more than once to generate nuclear power. We only use it once in this country, and then I guess it's either left to whatever, do whatever, or else it's used for militarism around the world. I think if we're going to continue with this, I think, one of the things we need to consider is at least reusing those rods to generate more energy and get all the energy we can out of them, because otherwise it's wasteful. It shows a wasteful mentality that America has in regards to just about everything she does, and it's pretty sad. It's part of the demise of this country. So just things to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Sherry Lewis, my last request to speak. Ma'am, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am?
Hi, I'm Sherry Lewis from San Luis Obispo. I am against nuclear power, and the reason I'm against nuclear power primarily is because there is no way to deal with the waste, and they haven't figured out how to do it. I don't know if it can be figured out. And the Diablo Canyon will, I believe, I'm not sure of this, but I think will be almost maxed out in its waste ability to hold waste even before the next licensing period would begin. And the nuclear waste is so deadly for not only hundreds of thousands of years, but maybe even a million years. And even the dry cask storage, I believe, is only considered to be about 100 years safe. You know, what happens to the other, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years? So nuclear waste is so deadly in such small amounts that we need to find an energy source that does not create more of this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am, I didn't get a request to speak slip from you.
Okay.
Okay, because we're going to be bringing this back on the 9th, so there'll be an ample opportunity to submit some. Okay, if you'd submit a letter or whatever the case may be, I'd appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. I can't get you on tape or anything at this particular point, so we're going to move on if I can, please. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I make the motion to continue, I just wanted to touch on, Mr. Greening brought up the question about the March 3rd meeting. The March 3rd meeting with the NRC, which is taking place here 1:30 in the afternoon and also at 7 in the evening at the Embassy Suites, is an environmental scoping meeting, and my understanding is that seismic issues are addressed under the public safety or the safety review, so it may not necessarily be related one way or another, but we'll address the issues here on when we come back to it on the 9th, and so I make a motion to continue this and to pull the letter that's on next week's agenda and combine it with this discussion on March 9th.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Patterson to continue this item, pull this as well as the letter for March 2nd and combined for a discussion on March 9th. Do I need a roll call? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Let's move into our final item of board business today, which is item D1, Madam Clerk.
Item D1 is submittal of the proposed 2010 state legislative platform for the County of San Luis Obispo.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrator. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about the state legislative platform for the county. Last October, county staff met with our county's legislative advocates, Peter Consulting, and there have representatives here today, and Paul Yoder and Karen Lang, which we'll be talking in a little bit about what the state's up to today. So county staff did meet with them, and we updated the legislative program from the prior year, and today we're bringing that to you for your review and approval. So we have a little power plant.
What do you know?
Self-sufficient.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, well, with power control, there's plenty of power there, I guess.
Excuse me for that. So we want to discuss the draft state legislative platform, the general guidelines, and specific objectives that we've come up with. And then we want the board to provide direction to staff on incorporating the legislative priorities of the State Association of Counties, known as CSAC, and the Regional Council of Rural Counties, RCRC, and the National Association of Counties, which is called NACO. Next slide, please. So our primary goal here is based on the county's mission statement to enhance the economic, environmental, and social quality of life for county residents. Our general legislative guidelines include, there's 13 of them. I'm going to go through these quickly, but the general guidelines include seeking legislation that protects and promotes the county's quality of life, diverse natural resources, and preserves the character and history of the county. Next, with seeking legislation that facilitates orderly economic expansion and diversification and increases the opportunity for discretionary revenues and programmatic and financial flexibility for the county. Next is supporting fiscal reform efforts in California, and you might know that many of those are going on right at the moment, to assure that our county is financially independent. And then next is supporting the county's authority to assure mutually acceptable tax sharing agreements for annexations, incorporations, and redevelopments. We move on to supporting legislation that supports tax and funding formulas for equitable distribution of state and federal monies. And you'll see in the CSAC and you'll see in the NACO guiding principles that they're pushing for the same thing. And then encouraging cooperation between the county and its cities, special districts, and other local agencies in efforts to develop regional plans, programs, and initiatives. And we move on to supporting legislation that facilitates regional cooperation on issues of community-wide and regional concerns. And we have supporting increased appropriations for mandated programs. As you know, the state keeps cutting back our state money for mandated programs, so this is an important one to continue to move forward on. And then next is opposing the mandates without revenue and oppose transfer of state programs to county unless adequate ongoing revenues are provided. In the same vein, we're asking the board to oppose efforts by the governor and the legislature to suspend the Prop 1A again or to contrive a budget mechanism to take local revenues, including property tax dollars, in order to balance the state budget. And then I think rounding it out is supporting legislative or initiative efforts that would modify the vote threshold requirement for the state budget and local voter-approved gasoline sales tax from the two-thirds to a 55% vote. And then supporting returning the vehicle license fee back to its historic levels. I don't think that's even on the state's radar at the moment, but it's something to keep in mind. And then supporting state governance reform, which will enhance protections of local government. Again, there are many of those that are now, CSAC is working on a lot of the governance reform, and there's a couple of reform actions out there that are working. Next, Nikki. So those are the 13 general guidelines that your board is being asked to consider and adopt today. There are a number, actually there's 34 specific legislative objectives. I'm going to go through just a few of them, but they run the gambit of things that the board is interested in, the district attorney, health care issues, public works issues, we have assessor, library, and human resource issues, and planning and building items that are all included as part two of the platform, the priority, specific priority legislative objectives. A number of those that are high profile, one would be appropriating additional or Prop 1B funds for highways 41 and 46. This has continued from the last year, and always the highway funds seem to be in jeopardy, and I think they're still in jeopardy this year as the state works through their budget, and I think Paul Yoder will talk about that in just a little bit of where the state is heading in that area. And then an effort to restore the Williamson Act subventions to its highest historical levels. That's about $1 million to the county budget that was eliminated last year. The board absorbed that cost, and it is not coming back this year as far as we know. So lots of counties are losing quite a bit of funds from here, and there is an effort to get those back. But again, I don't think that the state's looking at that in terms of returning that Williamson Act money to the state or to the county. We also, there's a specific item about retaining land use and site authority and final approval of renewable energy plants at the local level. This is important. There's two big solar plants, as you know, in the California Valley area that comes under local land use authority, and we certainly want to keep it that way. And then supporting residential and commercial production of renewable energy. We're well on the way of doing a lot of green projects, and as you know, we have many grants that we're working on right now to push forward some of those initiatives. So that's something important to keep in mind. And then we get into these health areas here of increasing state funding for costs associated with providing health coverage. And as you know, the state is pulling back on that. And Eric Greening had a question earlier about the 10% reduction in the health agency. That 10% represents the general fund portion that we're cutting back, 10% of the general fund portion. The health and social services programs are primarily funded by state and federal funds. Those are diminishing, which in the past the board has been very generous in overmatching or giving additional general fund money to those programs to support them and keep them vibrant. But as we are all finding out from the national to the state to the local level, we have less and less money to deal with these issues. As the state pulls back more money, we are decreasing our overmatch as well in order to help balance our budget. So that's why there's a 10% reduction, because the increased overmatch over the years that health has been given from this county. So we have a number of health care issues that are on the platform as well. Next. Also, there's a line in there of restoration of property tax administration program. That's something the assessor was getting reimbursed for working the property tax administration for all cities in the county and the schools, and we used to get some reimbursement for that, but that's no longer happening. And then supporting the removal of the provision in the Coastal Act that exempts developers from exhausting all local appeals before appealing to the Coastal Commission. That's something that's come up recently that your board is interested in removing those provisions. So those are supporting issues. There's some opposing legislation that we want to oppose that reduces any federal or state funding in support of programs or restricts or alters local control of First Five programs or proposed takeaways for gas tax and other road revenues. Again, something that will be talked about in just a few minutes is the state is proposing to put in place a kind of convoluted takeaway in the gas tax area, supported by some other taxes, but yet remains to be seen whether it's a good deal or a bad deal for the county. I can't imagine it's actually going to be a good deal for us, but we'll see. And then we move into, that's the legislative platform for the local San Luis County platform. I've listed a few CSAC priorities that really do coincide with what we're seeking. The CSAC priorities include protecting the health and safety of all Californians, seeking budget resolutions that provide long-term results, rebuilding the economy, and focusing on long-term reforms, all very broad, but something that we're all very interested in. And then CSAC also has principles for actual reform at the state level, and they're asking, suggesting reform should align responsibility with the authority among state and local governments, which we're all interested in, should result in responsible and transparent decisions by the state. The county certainly is responsible for being very transparent. The state is less transparent. They're asking for a little more transparency at the state level. And to reestablish accountability and responsibility between the residents and their elected leaders. So those are the principal reform efforts that CSAC has underway. And it's in terms of the NACO legislative priorities, it's, again, very similar. Oppose unfunded mandates that they force down upon states and counties. Support economic stimulus. Support health reform. Support transportation and aviation reauthorization. And support national and renewable energy legislation. Next. So our recommendations here are to take a look at what we've provided you today on our priorities and legislative platform, and if you agree with it, to approve that. That helps us in terms of our legislative efforts at Sacramento and helps our legislative consultants work any legal issues that they may have or law submitting any type of changes to legislation. And then provide direction on the incorporation of the priorities found in the legislative platforms for the CSAC, the RCRC, and the NACO. I didn't mention the RCRC. There were so many of them that I've listed in the packet. They're here, but I just felt there were so many that I just leave it up to the board to decide if they want to deal with that or not. So with that, I entertain any questions, or we can have Paul Yoder from Peterson Consulting give a quick briefing or questions.
Okay, Supervisor Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before we get to Mr. Yoder, one of our priorities, which I think came up, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe Mr. Grant remembers this, or one of my colleagues on the Coastal Commission on changing the Coastal Act on appeals, came up when we were discussing.
It did. I was going to ask the same question. Thank you.
Yeah. And I maybe we could wait for this, but I got a call from the executive director of the Coastal Commission yesterday, who made it clear that they consider unhindered access to the Coastal Commission to be a sacrosanct principle, and that they would oppose this. I think rather than getting into a fight with the Coastal Commission, I would see removing this as something that would be wise for us to do.
A wise comment.
Okay.
The Coastal Commissioner will tell us.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I support removing this from our platform. I, too, talked to the executive director of the Coastal Commission yesterday, and his concern was that it would be problematic for the Coastal Commission. And I think it's important to point out that these are just appeals that are within the coastal zone itself, so there are actually very few of them, so the cost is not very large, any cost incurred by the county for not charging a fee for these. And also, if this change were made, it would take the local authority away to deal with these issues. It would go straight to the Coastal Commission, and I think it's important that local residents have an opportunity to deal with the issues here locally before they do go to the Coastal Commission, and they don't lose that right. But we might get it resolved here locally, which is a better venue and less expensive and more expeditious. So I would support Mr. Hill's request that that particular item on page 19 of the staff report, actually item number 11 in the platform under planning and building, that be removed.
So we can just put in there problem resolved?
Quick question, Mr. Grant. I know that and it's going to be a moving target. There's a lot of unknowns, but based upon some of the, I guess, suggestions that the state's going through right now in terms of taking gas tax, these sorts of things, do we have any anticipation of dollars that we're going to be referencing in our budget, or is this going to be an unknown throughout the year?
Well, at this point, we'll know a little bit. The state's working on the budget right now. They may have made some budget decisions as of last night or today, and Paul Yoder can talk about that. But I will tell you that it will be a moving target throughout the next year because the state is only addressing the current year shortfall, and I'm not even sure they're really addressing all of it at this point. They still have a $20 billion hold to fill next year. So as we go through this, it'll be similar to what we've done this year. We'll have to come back on a regular basis as the state makes their decisions. Unfortunately, it's just going to be an ongoing, fairly traumatic event every time the state makes a business decision or a financial decision that affects our county.
Could that be part of one of our legislative objectives, problem, the state's inability to make good decisions? No. Mr. Yoder, go ahead, sir.
That's a great segue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
That's okay.
Paul Yoder, Karen Lang with Peterson Consulting. First, if I may, before I go into the presentation, and we will try to keep the presentation brief in recognition of what you've already done this morning, I want to thank the board for support the last 3 months. It hasn't been easy, the passing of our beloved colleague, Don Peterson. Peterson Consulting is continuing to thrive. It will continue to thrive. Karen and I worked alongside Don for many, many years. I myself worked alongside Don for 20. I wish osmosis was a perfect process. I wish I'd learned everything I could have from him during that time. But we are dedicated to representing San Luis Obispo in the Peterson tradition going forward. And so thank you. I want to talk about the budget. As Jim just mentioned, the deficit was pegged by the governor at $19.9 billion. That's $6.6 billion in the current year and a $13.3 billion problem in the budget year, according to the governor. In his January budget proposal, the governor said, of that $19.9 billion problem, I want $7 billion to come from the federal government. At the time, he was derided by the majority party in the legislature as being too optimistic about that. The legislative analyst said, well, $7 billion may be overly optimistic, but we may in the end get $3 billion. So far, even up until this point, the governor actually looks like he has secured $3 billion potentially from the federal government. It's unclear if he'll get the remaining $4 billion, but what I really want to point out to the board with respect to this part of the governor's proposal is that after he said, I expect $7 billion from the federal government, the governor then said, if I don't get that $7 billion, here's this laundry list of programs that I want automatically cut. And it wasn't in gradations. It was an all-or-nothing proposition. So the governor said, either we get $7 billion from the feds or we cut $7 billion in programs. And I think down the road, it's going to be interesting to see how the legislature works through all that. We are currently, excuse me, that's incorrect. Yesterday, we ended the Proposition 58 session called by the governor. The legislature had 45 days to respond in some fashion to the current fiscal emergency. As of yesterday, it appeared that they were able to send him approximately $2.5 billion in solutions. They were not able to send him one of the largest components of what they needed to send to him, and that was the transportation tax swap that the CAO referred to just a moment ago. I could stand up here probably all day and talk about the mechanics of that swap. You obviously don't want me to do that. Let me just tell you that the key thing about the swap is that it be a simple majority vote bill, or the key thing to the Democrats, I should say, in the legislature, is that it be a majority vote bill. And they have fashioned it in a way that legislative council tagged it as a simple majority vote bill. But in putting that bill together, the majority party didn't just deal with transportation revenues, they also dealt with the net operating loss that's on the books currently for the state of California. And they wanted to push that out into future budget years. That still allowed the bill to be a wash financially, and so that is still something that they can take up with a simple majority vote. However, yesterday, as you may have read, the governor said he would veto that bill if they send it down to him. The key thing the county needs to know right now, going back very specifically to the issue of how much money will you have for streets and roads in 2010-2011, is that, and we've been in conversations with CSEC, and our lobbyists have been talking to members too. As we understand it, you would see probably at least as much as you would normally expect to see under Proposition 42, maybe even a little bit more for streets and roads. But here's the catch. Under this proposal, counties would be trading, and cities would be trading, the constitutional protections found in Proposition 42 for status quo funding. And the issue of the constitutional protections that we have become accustomed to would really be set aside and left for another day. And there are people gathering signatures on an initiative that would reinstitute those protections. But I think what the board members need to know today is that if the package, as the Democrats have crafted, goes down to the governor and the governor signs it, for 10-11, your streets and roads funding is probably status quo, give or take. At the risk of being quoted, it's probably status quo. The other thing I think is very important for the board members to know about the package very specifically is that it's on the issue of deferrals. Counties have obviously suffered deferrals over the last year and a half, 2 years. This package, as it's designed, will give the controller, will actually clarify that the state controller has some pretty sweeping unilateral powers to defer payments in the state of California. Specifically for counties, in July, starting July 1st, deferrals could occur up to 60 days per the controller. On October 1st, deferrals could occur up to 90 days per the controller. And going into the fiscal year, into 2011, another 60-day deferral would be unilaterally authorized for the controller to put into motion. Three separate deferrals, two different lengths of time. The controller could shorten those deferrals if he sees fit, but we would virtually be guaranteed of three separate deferrals in the 10-11 state budget year. Looking forward, assuming they do this package, the total price tag on the package is approximately $5 billion. There's not a lot of current year cuts. They're mainly budget year cuts. So I think really the way the majority party in the legislature is looking at this package is as sort of a down payment on the $19.9 billion. And I think their view is if they can send the $5 billion package down to the governor, if the governor signs that package, they have $14.9 billion left, as much as $3 billion in new monies may materialize from the federal government, maybe several billion dollars more. Revenues in December were up by $500 million. They were up in January by $1.3 billion. And what we had a hunch on has recently been confirmed in statements from the legislative leaders who have said, we want to see how the revenues come in February and March and April and May and June. We've cut a lot of programs over the last year and a half, 2 years, and we don't want to cut anything that we don't absolutely have to cut anymore. And so that's the scenario that we see playing out going forward. And a lot more will be known after the May revote. Just a couple loose ends, and then I will conclude and take any questions that you may have. We're going to, in terms of politics in Sacramento, we're going to have a new speaker on March 1st, John Perez will be sworn in. Karen Bass will no longer be the Speaker of the Assembly. That's the only change in leadership that we will probably see going forward through the rest of the year. So far, we have seen competing stimulus packages, legislative packages, jobs packages from the Democrats and the Republicans. We're tracking those, talking to staff, making sure we can get anything in those packages that would benefit San Luis Obispo County. Friday was the deadline for the introduction of new bills. There were 1,500 new pieces of legislation put through. Karen has them all memorized, of course, at this point. She had the weekend and yesterday to do that. But we're going through them one by one with a fine-tooth comb, looking for any potential impacts for San Luis Obispo, or looking for opportunities, frankly, to do the things that you have set forth in your legislative program. And I think that's it, Mr. Chairman. With that, I'll conclude and take any questions you may have.
Cool.
just a comment. I wish that for every one bill they introduce, they'd take 10 out. In regard to the deferrals, Mr. Yoder, you mentioned there's a possibility of three different deferrals. Would that, in essence, though, create or kind of a fallover of a deficit for the following year? I mean, wouldn't that just go on with the deficit?
I don't know what the true accounting or reckoning might be for the state. We have a structural deficit of approximately $10 billion. So for the next 3 or 4 years, we'll probably at least have that deficit. And then those deferrals, I think, when they are exercised, if they are exercised by the controller, will add to that number in the out years.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions and observations, if I may. Mr. Yoder, wanted to get your opinion on our submittal. This is the first year that we've actually included RCRC and CSAC and NACO with our package. And in reviewing those, and Mr. Grant actually did a summary of NACO and CSAC, but I noticed that RCRC, actually their packet of issues, basically, or platforms, they call them policy principles, 38 pages. Our legislative platform in itself is 11 pages, and I was concerned about the voluminous nature of all of this, and if you'd be able to track it, but if Karen's keeping track of 1,500 bills up in Sacramento, this is a no-brainer. My concern is, well, my question is there anything in those packets that really isn't represented in some way in our legislative platform already? I know the summary that Mr. Grant made in his presentation relative to NACO and CSAC, you know, are sort of general in content and really mirror some of the things that we have. My concern about including RC and RCRC's 38 pages is there might be something in there that really we don't support. And I'm concerned about including those for that reason, because I know RCRC has actually supported bills that our board didn't. They really represent the very small rural counties in Northern California for the most part. And I just think there's the potential there, if we include that, that there might actually be some things that we don't support, specific things. And so I'm a little nervous about just buying into those three organizations, and we are a member of those three organizations currently, and I know we have communication with them, and mm-hmm. we have the ability to support directly anything that they're proposing, so I don't know that we necessarily need to include it in our legislative platform, and I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I would just state the obvious, frankly, Supervisor, that this is, you led off with board members saying, I've read this, I've talked to the chair of the Coastal Commission, this is your document, and I personally can't stress that enough to you, this is your document, it's not mine, it's not staff's, it is your document, and I think what you have in it when you adopt it has to be what you want in it.
Right, and I just wanted your feedback about your evaluation of RCRC, NACO, and CSAC, if you saw anything in there that is inconsistent with our document.
In general, I probably would say no, I don't see anything like that. I'm not aware of the instances you referred to where RCRC maybe had one position in this county.
That was specific legislation.
Right. Yeah. I think in general, all three organizations have really honed their base, you know, legislative principles. They're iterated more than annually. I mean, just perpetually. And I think a lot of work by a lot of staff and a lot of electeds in California and nationwide have gone into all three documents. So I can vouch for them, but I can't own them, and I just can't stress that enough to the board members.
Right. I understand that, and thank you for that.
I'm going to go to Mr. Grant.
Oh, okay.
Something that
yes, Jim Grant. In regards to that, I've just would throw out a suggestion here. If you didn't want to incorporate those legislative priorities for either or any of the three that we've attached for your information, you could have staff, we could just track everything within those so that it separates it from the actual county legislative platform. It's a bit safer, obviously, to do that. And if we see something in there that is of interest or mirrors what we do, we could bring that back to the board.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Grant. That's a good suggestion, and it gives me a little more comfort.
And that kind of goes, I think we had a prior discussion about the possibility. Supervisor Gibson and I were going to be going through the different the NACO, RCRC, and CSAC to see if, in fact, there were overlapping policies and if these policies were really part of what we wanted to do. And we haven't got to that yet, but we're going to get there.
Okay, I'm sorry. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other comment I want to make regarding the process in Sacramento. I think that we do obviously want to have transparency as recommended by the CSAC platform in general. We want transparency in Sacramento. We don't always get that, especially when we have the Big Five doing the budget negotiations in a closed room. For me, that's the priority, to change that process, and we have general language in our platform that addresses that. But I also want to tell my colleagues and the general public, too, the problem we get into, or an example of an issue that not adopting a budget on time or the state deferring payments that are due to not only the county and cities, but a lot of the service providers that are implementing programs that Sacramento has mandated. At our board meeting, and I serve as the Board of Supervisors representative to the Community Action Partnership here in San Luis, formerly EOC, and at our board meeting last week, we approved applying for another $500,000 line of credit to go with the $500,000 line of credit that we already have, just to keep day-to-day operations going for state-mandated programs where the state hasn't paid us yet. And that's the problem, and we need to really emphasize, again, it gets back to how Sacramento is doing business and these shell games that they play with deferrals and that sort of thing. It's very problematic, not only, again, for the county and for the cities, but for a lot of the nonprofit service providers and the agencies that rely on that funding.
Thank you, Mr. Yoder. I'm going to go to the public now. I've got three requests to speak. Mr. Greening, please, and followed by Andrew Christie.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you for having this discussion, and I'd like to thank the people who are trying to fill Mr. Peterson's shoes. I guess the first issue I would raise is in transportation, I would like to see some mention of the tremendous crisis in public transit. Right now, it's basically heavy on the streets and roads. On page D19, that's a top priority. On page D117, again, transit doesn't seem to rise to the surface. If we're not loud about it, they will steal from it. The governor wants to steal all four sources of operating funding permanently. The legislature has proposed preserving one of them, the sales tax on diesel. We don't know what the governor is going to do with that. Perhaps you can give some more information from that perspective and how it relates to the swap. But if we are not making noise, since we are full of documents, climate action plans, strategic growth, etc., that lean on public transit to reduce our vehicle miles traveled and give us the more livable communities, we had better make noise about it in Sacramento as our priority. So 9 and 17 are two pages worth could come in. On D113, I just want to remind you that our County Health Commission recommend support of single payer, and so if that could be part of our explicit platform, that would be a good thing. D119 and 20, it looks like that's coming off. Certainly it's a big change. I do recommend that you sever the RCRC platform from our own. You can have the discussion about whether you want to put the time into the organization, but I flagged things on pages 27 and 28 referencing biotechnology, page 34 on biomass and nuclear power, page 45 with a warped modality in transportation, again, just looking at road spending without the full modes. On page 53, it's interesting that their list of military facilities in RCRC counties did not include ours. It makes me wonder if they notice us or if we're just a sort of an appendage. On D-154 with endangered species, it's easy to talk about balance, but how do you balance a species' right to exist with the decisions we make about what does or doesn't count in our economy? It's up to us to decide what's valuable. Those are our ground rules, and rather than asking species to balance our mistakes. Anyway, there's a lot in the RCRC platform that does need to be brought out and discussed if we're going to stand on it, and I think it's far simpler to not make it ours and own what we do have. So please do subtract the coastal, add the transit, and the single payer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. Christie, followed by Nina Gabriel, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honorable Supervisors, I'm Andrew Christie, Director of the Santa Lucia Chapter of the Sierra Club. There are many good things here. Thank you for supporting the retention of local land use and siting authority with local land use agencies and legislation to encourage installation of rooftop solar power and energy efficiency and the means to financially assist disadvantaged residents of Los Osos and mitigate affordability impacts of the sewer when it's built. These are all commendable initiatives until we come to the last priority objective in the legislative platform, to sponsor legislation to amend the California Coastal Act so that the county may charge an $800 fee to file a coastal appeal. It's good to hear sentiments coming from the board. Several of you seem to have gotten a message on why that's not a good idea. I will just simply add that if the county wants to make money or save money, you can send coastal appeals directly to the Coastal Commission, which is their invariable final destination, retain jurisdiction or not. Save the cost of processing coastal appeals in the county. It certainly does not make sense to spend tens of thousands of dollars in lobbying fees drained from the general fund as the outcome of a decision that came out of a board discussion of ways to offset costs to the general fund. We would ask you please strike priority legislative objective 11A from your state legislative platform. And as far as the RCRC's priorities go, we would agree with Supervisor Patterson's assessment. There are indeed many elements in there that this county does not agree with, that are opposed to the policies and the vision that you have staked out as a board. We would direct you primarily to the environmental section, where it's pretty clear, as Mr. Greening pointed out, what those are, and it would indeed be the simplest thing to simply not endorse those priorities as part of San Luis Obispo County's legislative priorities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Christie. Nina Gabriel, please.
Hi, Nina Grabiel Oceano. I just want to express some appreciation for some of the comments made by members of the board here as far as trying to make sure that we have some local input into with the state. I appreciate that. I wanted to just remind people that, the concept, I think, behind this country was basically that the individual had their own power that was given to them when they're born, and then it goes from there to their local community, and then to the state, and then to the federal government. I know it appears that it's the reverse now, but from that perspective, I would want to encourage the board to do all that they can to wean the county off from federal funds and state funds, unless, of course, it's something that we've paid into. We need to get that money back, but we really need to stop relying on these other governmental layers to support our community. As I said last week, I think this county has enough resources to stand on its own. Actually, so does the state of California. I've lived in California 54 years. It blows my mind to see the state that I used to be proud to live in when I was a child, that was so fruitful and bountiful, just be on its knees now. It's pretty pathetic. But on that, in that regards also, and I don't know if this is the appropriate place to bring this up or not. There is another item, A-19, that I came upon last night, and it's a request for monies from what's known as asset forfeiture funds. I think that's dirty money. That money, a lot of times, that money is taken from people who are completely innocent, and I think any request for monies from asset forfeiture should be rejected because it's dirty money. And it's I consider it unconstitutional and a step in the direction of a full-on police state, and I think we don't want to go there at all. And as far as what those funds were going to be used for, as for cameras and tasers, I don't think we want to go there either. You'd be surprised some of the things where some of those people put those tasers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see no more requests to speak. You want to respond to any of the comments there, please?
I can very briefly, through the chair, just on the issue of transit, if I may. I wanted the gentleman to know that the current proposal would give transit $350 million per year in perpetuity. In addition to that, there would be a one-time payment to transit agencies in California of $400 million. Help them get a little bit caught up on their operations needs as far as that goes. So that I left that out when I talked about the transportation proposal earlier, and so thanks for the opportunity to add that.
Absolutely. We've been contemplating sending Mr. Greening to Sacramento and being our spokesperson up there. He's quite articulate with these issues. I have no lights on at this particular point. I guess the question I have... I'm sorry. You have... Yours isn't on.
Well, go ahead.
Do we want to get into all the discussion with the RCRC, or is this something that we can support the CSAC legislation recommendations for our legislative platform and then monitor the others? Is that the direction we can go if we so choose?
Yeah, you can choose any direction you'd like. I think, actually, after rethinking this a little bit, the direction, at least my advice would be to approve the county's legislative platform by itself, and then I would suggest that we just monitor all of the other items.
Okay, with the removal of on D-119 of the request with the Coastal Commission issue.
Correct.
Yeah. Is that, am I hearing that correctly? Okay, Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Hill beat you.
No,
I was just going to make a motion if that was the case.
Well, I wanted to put one more thing on the table, if I may. Mr. Greening referred to the Health Commission's support of the single-payer system for California, and you know the legislature has adopted a single-payer program a number of times, only to have it vetoed by the governor. And I actually happened to be at the Health Commission meeting where I believe it was unanimously agreed to support a single-payer health plan for the state of California. And I would propose that we add that to our legislative platform.
I'm not going to go along with that until I can actually see a comparative analysis of that.
But put it on the radar, admin, if you will, but our Health Commission did support the single-payer system, and I think we ought to take a serious look at that. I don't know if we received a letter from them specifically, Mr. Grant. Are you aware?
I'm not aware of that. I'm thinking that on March 30th, there is a strategic planning session just for health.
It
might be a perfect opportunity to bring that up and discuss that.
Very, very good. Thank you. And then with that, if I may, Mr. Hill,
sure.
Move that we approve the county's legislative platform without the addition of the three attachments and the deletion of item 11 by planning and building on page D-119.
Second.
Is that part one and part two?
Pardon? There's it's problem and resolution. It's one item.
Very quickly, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sargent.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect to my colleagues, I'm not going to support the motion as presented for the reasons that there are taxations included within the platform we have in front of us, one of them being the VLF going to the highest historical level, and that's scary when in times where we're not selling cars. By not selling cars, we're not generating sales taxes that helps the local government. And I feel like every time we lower the percentage on a state level, taxes. It generates probably more taxes, but the beneficiaries are the bigger counties rather than us small counties. And I also have issues with the second part of the platform in front of us, such as on D111, the AB 32, SB 375. It's an unfunded mandate, and I don't know where the money is going to come from. What bothers me about that if you look at AB 32, which is vehicles miles reduced, but on the other hand, the same folks who's bringing this forward, they're cutting funding for transportation. It just doesn't make sense to me. There are several issues, and I know that I'm rushing to get out of here to be someplace I need to be, but regardless, this is important, and there are some issues that I really want to support, such as Proposition 10 to keep the control local with the first five commission. It goes, and those are some of the reasons that I won't be supporting the motion as is. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? I have the same sentiments in that regard. I don't know if there can be further analysis or further, further discussion on these items before we can adopt this entire legislative package with those. I don't know.
Well, we could certainly discuss removing any items that you have objections to. So if I think it would be appropriate for us to have a unanimous endorsement of the legislative platform. If there are issues that individual members are uncomfortable with, we could propose removing those, or we could continue this item to another date so we can actually get concurrence. I wouldn't, if Supervisor Meacham, if your only concern was that DLF item, I wouldn't object to moving that.
The DLF as well as the AB 32 issue.
I read that as well, but if you take a look at the language, the potential resolution, it simply states that we would support funding for those items. They point out that they were unfunded mandates, but I'll point out that we've been successful in obtaining grants to move forward with our effort here locally, and so we've actually had funding from the state to move our efforts both on SB 375 and AB 32 forward here. We're one of the leading counties in the state in addressing both of those issues, and I think we can continue to do that. All it really says is that we support funding from the state for those programs.
I understand, but I guess my objection goes more towards then establish the funding before we can go forward with these, as opposed to making the mandate and then us trying to figure out how we find the money to do that.
Well, those bills have been passed.
Mm-hmm. I know they've been passed, but they're also unfunded.
There are more than just we're asking for the funding. So they've been passed. We're asking for them to actually provide the funding so that local governments can implement them.
If I may quickly ask Mr. Hill that, I appreciate where you're coming from, but the issue is that we want them to fund, but they're already in the drain, so to say. So where would it come from? And that's a real issue, that the only source they're going to come back to is more taxation. It's something that I don't have a good answer for, but it's not just the VLF, the item before that. If you're looking for a unanimous support, probably the best is to continue this item so I can spend more time with staff. But overall, with everything included as is, even if we took one item out, there are still more than one item for me to be able to support this to move forward. But feel free to move forward today, or I can promise that if we continue this item, that as is, by moving one item, will satisfy my needs to support it. But overall, I have several issues with others as well.
Mr. Patterson?
Well, just that this hasn't changed significantly from last year. And I'm just curious to know what the concerns are, because we did unanimously adopt this platform last year.
Last year, my understanding was when we talked about VLF, we said historical value. We didn't say highest historical value. If I go back to the historical value, to me was when the governor came into the picture And what was the history when he got into the picture was 0.65%, and as we speak today is 1.15%. If you go to highest historical value, it's 2.some% if I stand to be corrected, but those are the figures coming to my head. So I like it spelled out. Personally,
I'd be willing to remove that item. I don't think it has a prayer in Sacramento anyway, and so I wouldn't have a problem taking that one item out. That's just in the guidelines.
There is another item on the above it with the 55% water approval on gasoline, and I don't know if, since it's related to gasoline, I would, Mr. Warren, that's where I make a living, and I don't know if that will create a conflict for me or not.
I don't think it's...
Okay. So then, in that case, that is also a problem for me, that I don't mind using some of those techniques locally for empowering local government, but on a state level, I have issues with it because we will not benefit from it, as we have seen in the past.
Well, it doesn't sound as though we're going to get support from...
Let me suggest something here, if I could, and then that'll go to you, Supervisor Hill. Could we take the concerns that have been raised with that one, the support the legislation initiative efforts for the two-thirds, the VLF, take those two and basically monitor those as opposed to putting those into our legislative
platform. What was the other one?
The other one was on page D1.
On D1-8, you have that word on the top of the charter.
Yeah. D1-8, you have, see where we are?
Yes.
Okay, it's the support legislation, it's the third bullet point, and the fourth bullet point. If those were to be monitored, I don't want to hold up our legislative platform. I'd like to move this forward if we could. But with those two issues, if we can monitor those as opposed to have those on our... And I would assume that we have an opportunity to re-engage with this. So we don't. This isn't something that is completely off the table at this particular point in time.
It's a living, breathing document.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Mr. Hill.
I don't support the removal of the one above the VLF, which is changing the threshold to from 2/3 to 55%.
And I don't either. That was on the legislative platform last year. We see gridlock in Sacramento as a result of that. It's ruled by minority instead of majority when you have that 2/3 vote, and the Council of Governments also unanimously approved that language to reduce that 2/3 to 55% for the adoption of the state budget. And I think it's prudent that we do that simply because we certainly need to make government more responsive and more efficient. And it's not working now.
Well, let me ask you this: do we need to adopt this entire document by vote of the board at this particular point, or can we adopt the suggested legislative platform and then have vote on a couple of the other points here? Because I can see we're not going to get anywhere as far as if you have to adopt the whole thing, then I can see where we're going to be probably in a 2-2 deadlock.
Well, I think we could separate the guidelines from the actual platform. Can we not? Or at least have separate votes on it.
Yeah, you can. It's up to you. This is your document. If you want to separate it and take votes on it, you can do that.
So
obviously, it's a little easier to accept it as one document. It helps all of us in terms of what we can do with it.
Well, let me do this then. Let me suggest the. You want to separate the guidelines? We can separate the guidelines, take a vote on that, and then go to the legislative platform and take a vote on that.
Well, the legislative platform objectives are
based on the guidelines.
Right, and I would be willing in my motion to amend it to remove support returning the vehicle license, VLF, back to its highest historical level. I would agree to add that to my motion that we remove that if the second would.
Sure. Okay, but we still are at an impasse here on the one just prior to that, on the 2/3 to 55%.
But I hear a defense of why that's a problem.
Why is it so specific to, in my way I read this, is on the gasoline and sales tax issue?
I can't remember exactly what department that came from, to tell you the truth.
Go ahead.
Your microphone, Nikki. Just push your button.
At the face.
We don't want to push your button. We know what happens when we push your button. You get all excited here.
I have to go back in my memory, but I think it was a public works item. And in the discussion last year when they were having takes, the gas tax takes, that's all I can really remember. But
so if this 55% or that from two-thirds is specifically for gasoline and sales tax, is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
Because it goes to the state budget issue as well.
It's two items. It's for the entire state budget and the local voter-approved gasoline and sales tax from two-thirds to 55%.
And my position before was that I can support the voter-approved gasoline and sales tax issue, but I can't support that from a budget standpoint.
Well, and again, that was in our platform last year, and so I'm just curious why it's changed.
Mr. Sargent, do you have any more?
Yeah, I'm ready if you want to take action.
Well, this
last year it wasn't spelled out on the platform, Mr. Patterson. It was brought to us the last minute by you. If it wasn't spelled out on the platform, as I remember, I can be.
It was added to it. It was added to it. I wasn't really clear with that. I had assumed that it was specifically for. I'm sorry, Nikki, go ahead.
All right, I'm hoping I'm remembering this correctly. I think this was added at a later date. You all approved the platform last January and then had discussions at another board meeting, and it came up that this might be good on our platform.
In writing, it was added to the last minute.
Can you remember? I mean, it was added at a later date.
Right. I believe that this item and the quagga mussels item were added in June.
Quagga mussels.
Okay.
And I believe that was consistent with CSAC at the time, was it not?
Yes, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And League of the Cities.
Okay. Okay, you're willing to remove the vehicle license fee?
Yes,
and leave the other as it is?
Yes.
Okay, let's take the vote on that. I have a motion to support the legislative regulatory platform with the exclusion on page D18 of the support returning the vehicle license fee, the VLF, back to its highest historical level. Are there any others at this point?
Yes, we're removing
the
was already mentioned.
Item 9 on page D119, and we are not including the attachments.
Correct. Those were for monitoring. Okay. I'm sorry. You have
item 11. Not item 9. Item 11.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. Item 11 on page D119.
Are we okay?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Sajjan?
No.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate your report. I don't have any request to speak on closed session, Mr. Jensen.
Approximately 45 minutes.
45 minutes. We will be back probably somewhere right around 12:30. We're going to go right into closed session at 12:30, 4:01.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.